The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Following almost 3 months of a complete blockade to aid going into Gaza, the entire population is facing a severe risk of famine. Acute malnutrition is increasing among starving children in the enclave. Every hour counts. And joining me now to discuss is the spokesperson for UNICEF, James Elder. James, good morning and welcome.
Hey there, Pat. Good morning.
Now, it's good to talk to you again. There is, I suppose, a small amount of good news. You've managed to get some of your own trucks in.
Yes, absolutely. Dozens and dozens of trucks. Even in the worst days, we were getting cash assistance, immunisation and so on. But yeah, our primary healthcare facilities, those places that deal with mums and newborns, malnourished children, those stocks were almost out. So there's no doubt that is good news. But unfortunately, Pat, I mean, we just can't pretend that this trickle is a solution to, as you rightly said, the near famine conditions. There is just so much stuff waiting to come in. And Honestly, this it looks like this is about letting these trucks is in about reducing international pressure, not about the risk of famine, Pat. The scale of aid is painfully inadequate, and it looks more like cynical optics more than any attempt to tackle the soaring hunger. The fact remains we can save these children if Israel allows it. They're not allowing it with a handful of trucks every day versus the 500 we had during the ceasefire.
Now, so it is tokenism on the part of Israel. They can say they're letting trucks in. I mean, if you get a few, maybe a couple of dozen trucks in every day, how do you decide where each should go?
Well, it's a great question. Essentially, by the occupying authorities, by Israel, because we only get to work in areas that are deconflicted. So whilst during the ceasefire, there were 400 different points where all the UN agencies, all our brave partners could distribute from. Now it's where we can go to knowing that that is a deconflicted site and we won't be bombed. There won't be quadcopters killing children as they're receiving aid. So both it is a dark moral issue because we have 2 million people who urgently need support, but ultimately it's militaristic determination as to where we are allowed to go with what are meager supplies.
So you may be aware from contacts with your people on the ground where there's an acute need, but no way of getting there, which is heartbreaking.
Oh, it's horrendous. Look, my colleagues on the ground, Pat, it's not to say they have the levels of starvation, which when you see that in a child, it's a child's screams firstly, and the body starts to eat its fat, then its muscle, and then it grows quiet, and that's the worst moment. But my colleagues are all losing weight, and they work 18-hour days. I had colleagues who spent 36 hours to go to the border, wait under military supervision, and then to bring supplies back. But yeah, the frustration because of what they see as you drive through that apocalyptic zone, because of the children that they know have that need. I mean, that's what frontline workers do. But as I say, there is a huge level of frustration because the aid is across the border. We showed during the ceasefire, let us do our work, watch nutrition rates fall, watch sanitation improve, let doctors have the medicines that they need. And slowly, slowly after this chaos and cruelty will turn things around. But of course, then an 11-week blockade put people into a physical and psychological space they'd never been, despite the hell that they've endured for more than a year and a half.
Now, we know that Netanyahu's not for turning. He's determined to completely take over Gaza and enforce the Israeli rule of law there. But can you sense the international pressure on Israel? Is it palpable? I mean, can you see by their actions that they are moved by pressure from Europe?
I mean, it's tricky terrain for me to speculate on the politics, but there's no doubt that if you listen to comments, no one was looking to even allow any trucks in, and that came from the pressure. But this is why I think it's important we note that rather than see it as good news, to see actually the cynicism, because the UN and partners and commercial trucking has the ability, as we did just 3 months ago, to get 500 trucks a day, and now this drip does seem that it's got its eyes on international pressure, not its eyes on the ground. And that's why we see just now, today, this new humanitarian modality, if you will, Pat, that's being set up, that has nothing to do with the United Nations, nothing to do with humanitarian principles, nothing to do with really reaching the levels of people who need. So right now we're looking again more at politics and actually the people on the ground.
This is the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, GHF, which the Israelis were setting up in coordination with the Americans. And the idea was that they would deliver aid where it was needed. But I noted that a military veteran from the US, Jake Wood, he actually resigned from his job as executive director shortly after taking it up because he figured he couldn't do the job they were asking him to do because it wasn't perhaps real.
Absolutely. Word for word. And we'd had so much back and forth on that. The reality, well, first and foremost, you don't need a new aid modality because the one, as I say, that was during the ceasefire of all those partners on the ground and the United Nations, all the different arms, 500 trucks a day, showed what can be done, 400 distribution points. And then this idea, Pat, is to have a handful of distribution points just for food, just in the south. So it's about baiting people down to the south with the promise of food, stay in the north and starve or come to the south with food. Now, beyond that being against all humanitarian principles, it's also just not practically possible. It's unworkable to move that many people. You can't have that few distribution points. There's so many injured. There's women with children, with husbands who aren't alive. We have many, many more parts of humanitarian aid that people require. And finally, yeah, that CEO would rather, you know, just step down than be part of what is clearly a cynical attempt to try and force a population to move with, as I say, the bait of food. Yeah.
I mean, that is disgusting that they use food, which people vitally need, as a bait to get them to, if you like, concentrate, and I use that word carefully, concentrate in a particular area over which they will exercise maximum control.
No, spot on, Pat, and you use it carefully, but the most senior Israeli officials do not mix words. They're very, very blunt when they speak about what they're seeking to do with this population. So, you know, it's very, again, as a humanitarian, I'm in tricky terrain when I talk politics, but I think now that the language being used is so very clear with the ambitions. They're not talking in circles. They are black and white about the aim to move people to the south. And I talk to people, Pat, I'm in back in Gaza in a week, so I'm slowly collecting all the medicines people ask me, the people I've met on the ground, and they're done. They're absolutely shattered. The ceasefire, they went home. They went home to their rubble. If they were half a building, they went in and repaired, repainted. Otherwise, they put a tent up over the rubble. And now those same people are being told, move again. They don't have a tent. They don't have the wherewithal. They got nothing left to give. And they're terrified, of course, because they know full well that if you are told to move, you can still be bombed when you moved. Well, you and I have spoken about the safe zones of a year and a half, how, you know, it can't be safe if there's no food and water and medicine. And still they bombed those. We've seen 70 children, 70 girls, and boys killed every single day on average since the ceasefire broke. So, you know, the population is terrified to move, but this is the nasty game being played.
Now, I want to go back to a resonance from another war and the war trials that followed, and the answer to an accusation of a war crime was, I was only obeying orders. And I just wondered, there are members of the IDF who are doing all of this, be they generals or be they foot soldiers, and I'm sure they'll say, I'm ashamed of what's going on in their private moments, but I was only obeying orders. Have you come across any decency in the IDF at all?
Look, I don't get enough contact, Pat. You sit at a checkpoint and at holding points and so on, and it's tense, but you have a good negotiator to go and have discussions. So I have certainly seen seen men fishing, fleeing from a checkpoint and being shot, but I don't have enough experience to understand across the board what's happening there.
I'm just wondering if you ever saw acts of kindness, arbitrary acts of kindness from the Israeli side.
No, I saw women carried off wheelchairs and forced to move across arbitrary borders on the Gaza Strip, being watched over by soldiers. I saw things I'd rather not seen that I'm sure will be repeated again many, many times when there aren't those there to bear witness.
Now, James, one of the things we have to beware is conflating criticism of Israeli actions in Gaza with anti-Semitism, because you know, you meet and hear from Jewish people who are utterly ashamed of what the current Israeli government is doing in the name of Judaism. So it's possible to admire and respect many Jewish people, but not admire and respect what's going on in Gaza.
Oh, Pat, irrespective of anyone's faith, you meet wonderful people all around the world, as I have, be they Hindus, Jews or Muslims. It's the great privilege of my work to move and meet so many people, irrespective of their faith. There has been a struggle through this whole thing for people across the globe to hold multiple contradictory thoughts at the same time. And here is one. This should not ever have been happening to children. Hostages should never have been taken. Hostages should not still be somewhere, someone's mother or brother, somewhere in Gaza. All these things on that simple point, again, point to a ceasefire. During ceasefires, during negotiations, more than 150 hostages got to go back to their families where they should be during those same times. Aid flowed across the Gaza Strip. Under military means, less than 10 hostages have gone home. So all these things, time and again, point to a ceasefire for everyone in that region.
Finally, I should ask you about the status of UNICEF in the Israeli regard. I mean, we know that they don't have any time for UNRWA, which is the specific organization for the Palestinians in their difficulties. What attitude do they have to UNICEF, given that it's about children?
Look, I think that we've got amazing colleagues on the ground who work behind closed doors all the time. UNICEF's mandate is so broad, as you say, immunisation, water, primary health care, mums, cash assistance. It's such a critical element. UNRWA, of course, even bigger, ever more critical. But at the same time, you know, as you and I are doing, we candidly speak truth to what we're seeing. So it's a juggle. But first and foremost, UNICEF's mandate is child rights. And that's why we simply have to say what we see at the same time, going across those red lines to deliver services wherever we possibly can to girls and boys and mums.
James Elder, spokesperson for UNICEF. James, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.